Hey everyone, good morning slash good afternoon, depending on where you are in the world, country. It's Friday, April 19th. This is the plant-based, usually morning show, and we're sponsored by Compliment. That is lovecompliment.com. Best vegan supplements and products that money can buy, in my opinion. My biased opinion.
Did you compliment today, Matt?
Nope, haven't complimented yet. I do my complimenting in the nighttime, right before bed, when I take my pills. Omega-3s and regular old Compliment Essential. What about you guys? Compliment already?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Several compliments so far.
All right. Good.
I'm on two. I've got two compliments. Essential and chocolate protein this morning.
Huh. All right. Good. That's what I got. Well, Bianca is here. She's our Friday regular. Hello, Bianca. Good to see you. Always good to see you. Always fun. Mm-hmm. Danielle P., Mr. Jeffrey, Helen DeGennaro. I never know how to pronounce her name, but I haven't seen Helen in forever. She was
Yeah, welcome back, Helen.
Ambassador. Welcome back.
Woohoo. Helen.
So anyway, welcome to the show, everyone. Doug has walked away, but I was going to ask him about his much-hyped dinner with Rip Esselstyn last night.
Yeah, there was a lot of hype, and it's a little bit of a letdown. Maybe. I don't know. I had the pleasure, the honor, the privilege of joining the Plant Strong retreat, I think it's what it's called, on their last night of a week-long retreat, which in hindsight, I picked the day because it worked best for my schedule. But in hindsight, I shouldn't have picked the last night because, you know, at that point, everybody's kind of like celebrating together, you know,
right,
wrapping up the week.
Random guy.
You know,
and then there's Doug,
guy kind of coming in,
right,
out of nowhere. But it was awesome. It was there's like 100 people. They come to a conference center in Black Mountain, outside Asheville, where I live, and got to meet Rip, and he is as cool as you would imagine. I got to meet all of his team who we work with on various projects with Compliment. I got to hang out with Adam, who is one of Rip's best friends, but also a new colleague here at Compliment. It was a real cool night. I stayed for the talent show, which if you can imagine the Plant Strong crowd talent show, it's probably exactly what you're picturing in your head. But it was a lot of fun.
Cooking demos? I don't know.
What's that?
I said cooking demos?
lots of jokes about farts and plants making you stronger.
Wow.
Lots of made up songs and riddles and I don't know. It was really funny. It was and Rip and Adam performed a I'm Just Ken performance for everyone.
Nice.
From Barbie, of course, which is really cool.
Was anyone dunking on like oil, like saying like, oh man, oil eaters are the worst, or anything like that?
Yeah, some definite oil dunking for sure. Lots of meat, you know,
right?
Meat bashing. The dinner was great. It was like everything I could have ever wanted because it was a taco bar, and
planned for you,
full on Plant Strong, you know, recipes and stuff.
Right,
very delicious. I could eat that every single night. It's like 100 people and they were so invested and in enjoying themselves. It was just a really cool environment to see people so hyped on health and the power of plant-based foods and kind of rallying behind Rip and the Plant Strong movement and Plant Strong community. So I don't know. It was a good night.
That's very good. Worth missing your Thirsty Thursday for? I'm assuming there was no alcohol.
Yeah, no, definitely no alcohol.
Okay.
It was. Absolutely it was. Yeah. Although I had really hoped and planned to play pickleball because after the talent show, apparently they do a last night pickleball tournament. Mm-hmm. And I had full plans to do it, but post talent show, everybody was getting interview or autographs from or Rip to sign their books and like all the goodbyes and pictures and everything like that. And it was already 9 p.m. And I was like, I don't know. I looked at Adam. He's like, it'll probably be another hour before we start playing. I was like, I don't know if I can stick around for late night.
Did anyone ask Doug Hay for an autograph saying I'm a longtime No Meat Athlete fan? Or
no, but a lot of people knew who I was.
At least,
I don't know if they recognized my face, but once, you know, Adam would kind of introduce me to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh yeah, Plant-Based Morning Show, No Meat Athlete Radio. One person said, yeah, I get your notification that the morning show is going live every single day. And I was like, do you click it? And they're like, no. But she was like, but then she was like, but I don't turn it off either, you know?
Yeah, right. There you go.
So
Bianca points out what we talked about yesterday. The Plant Strong folks got to meet the local town councilman. Did you let that slip that you were involved in the government? And say, like, welcome to our fine town. It's a pleasure to host you here.
Yeah, it's just like, you're welcome back anytime. No, I didn't. We didn't talk about that. No.
No. Come on. All right. Good.
But, I got to say, like, the Plant Strong movement, what Rip has built and his team have built, and the whole Esselstyn family, of course, because his sister was there, and, mm-hmm. you know, and it all comes from their father's work. It's really cool and very inspiring, and it gives me encouragement, mm-hmm. I guess is the right word, that this diet and this movement and the stuff that we're doing, the stuff we talk about every day, really makes a dramatic impact on people's lives. Mm-hmm. because these people were living proof that, you know, a lot of them had major health issues a couple of years ago and kind of made, you know, switched to a different diet and they're feeling better than they ever had before. Some people, you know, were really taking this as their first step. And, you know, there's a story of one person with type 1 diabetes who had halved their insulin intake just over the course of the week at Plant Strong and eating that diet and stuff. And so I don't know, it's cool. And it made me appreciate what they're doing, but also appreciate what we're doing and the work that we, you know, I don't know, gave me inspiration for motivation to keep going.
Yeah. Good. Awesome. I mean, the closest thing I've been to this sort of thing is the Vegan Cruise. And mm-hmm. I know exactly the vibe where everyone's pumped, especially at the end of the week. Then listening to talks and things and eating that food all week. And then, I don't know, it's just like a big health reset. And you're motivated and inspired. Mm-hmm. So that is good vibes for sure. So glad you were able to do it.
And they're in August, they're coming back for a weekend, like I think a larger event, maybe 400 people or something.
Okay.
So if anyone's interested in joining the Plant Strong group at a live event, you should look into that.
Yeah. Tell them Doug sent you and said it would be free. And then
tell them the council member invited you to.
All right. Good. Mr. Jeffrey says, when's the plant-based morning show retreat? We don't have that planned just yet, but we talked about it one time on the show and that was ooh. Funny. Could have been
you invited everybody to your house, I think, for dinner.
I think I said I'd cook if they were paying some amount of money each. But if it wasn't, then I'd still happily be part of it. I think it'd be fun. Just wouldn't have a dinner at my house.
Yeah.
All right, good. So that's that. No pull-up competition, I'm sure, happened, right?
No pull-up competition. There was some flexing, but you know.
Good. All right.
By Doug. Doug was the one that was flexing the whole time.
Yeah, I was just standing in the back. Like, you don't while they were all hugging each other goodbye and stuff like that. I'm just like in the back flexing.
All right, good. Glad to hear it. Well, it is Friday. You know what? We should play the Friday song now, Doug. We have that.
The Friday is in Rebecca Black Friday song?
Yeah, we used to play
is there
that.
Another Friday song?
That's true.
Yeah, there is another Friday song. It's this one. You know that one?
No.
I don't know this one.
That one went viral for a little bit, but definitely not the Rebecca Black.
When I was in working my office job at DC, we would play the Rebecca Black song every Friday. I think that mm-hmm. was kind of like right after it had come out. And my colleague texted me the other day and she said she played it for her daughter for the first time, who's probably like 8 or something. And her daughter looked at her and said, Mommy, your music is really, really bad. And I was like, how does an 8-year-old know that like that is a bad song?
Wow.
Because it's kind of catchy.
Right. No, it's not like it's a good song, but on Fridays it sounds great. It's fun.
Yeah, we're stuck in your head and then you suffer through it for the rest of the
day. I think that kid has zero taste in music. Not one of the playlist at all. No interest in that. Terrible, terrible music taste. All right. So let's get to the weather report. We got some good stuff today. This is the big one. This is the kind of the athlete show, this Friday afternoon show. This is just fitness. No, this is more fitness geared stuff. A vegan athlete has just won Croatia's national weightlifting championship. Her name is Anna.
Female athlete, too.
Yes, she's a female. I don't know what her category was. I'm sure we can find that. I would imagine she was competing against other females for sure. Anyway, she won. She did the snatch and the clean and jerk. And then two of them, and then the scores calculated by combining those scores and all that and so on. So she won the senior national championship. I don't know why it's called senior national champion. She's been the junior national champ before. She's a full-time student. She doesn't look senior. She looks like, I mean, maybe a senior in college, but she doesn't look like a
senior adult. Not junior.
What's that?
Maybe senior is just not junior. Like junior.
Or junior. Right. Junior, right. Could be like freshman, sophomore, and then senior is junior, senior.
No, I just mean like adult would be senior and junior.
Right.
Would be.
I think that's probably what it is. It's not just for college kids. It's for everybody, whoever wants to enter it. So there's probably a kid's version and a grown-up version. She's now grown up. But anyway, here's the interesting part. She's only been lifting for 3 years, and she's only been plant-based for about that same amount of time. People told her she wouldn't be able to put on weight or keep the weight on with the plant-based diet, but she said she has put on 40 pounds since then. I wish we had her age here. That would help us with talking about the story. But I don't see that. Anyway, she put on 40 pounds eating lentils, quinoa. She doesn't mention protein powder. Lentils, beans, quinoa, oats, and wheat. And she says very easy to achieve. Plenty of carbs and protein, minimal fat. And I just don't understand how she did this in 3 years. Especially during that time, she already won the junior time and holds a junior record. Wow. So like, you know, that junior record probably came within 2 years of starting the sport, and she doesn't look like a giant or anything. So who knows? I don't know what kind of weight class.
Natural born talent.
Yeah.
What's that?
Natural born talent.
And a plant-based diet.
I guess. I thought we were supposed to not believe in natural born talent anymore, that it was all about 10,000 hours and all that stuff. And, you know, you're not born with stuff. So who knows?
That's definitely just not true. I mean, I think it's a combination of both, right? Like some people are born with natural talent and then put in the work and are able to turn it into something great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for certain sports, you're right. You could definitely have a body that favors that. And clearly she does. But I don't know. It's just like, I've gotten into weightlifting a little bit in the past few years, more than I had before. And like one of the things I kind of realized is like, it always seems like, well, you could get really, you know, bulked up in 6 months. And that is true. But to gain like a ton of strength, it seems like that just takes years of work. Like your body just needs to do those reps over and over and over. And you're not necessarily getting that big, but your body's getting better and better, just like running, right? You're getting better at doing that exact movement, and it's just less work to do the same movement. So I'm just amazed that she could do this in 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I mean, what she reported though is that like she feels like she has tons of energy, and like that like not having the fatigue and the lethargy that a lot of weightlifters get because of their diet and because of kind of how they're fueling their muscles. I think that's what she reported was the big difference for her, which I thought was really one accurate, at least from my experience, and interesting that like that is what she said set her apart, was that she had the energy to keep going and recovered faster.
Yeah. And you mentioned recovery. That's like, everyone mentions that people who are really successful athletes on plant-based diets, they say it's the recovery that it makes it better. And I do believe that for a weightlifter too, like that, you got to believe recovery is going to be a huge part of that process. And if there is any disadvantage in terms of not being able to have the same flexibility in terms of getting protein or getting, you know, whatever nutrient you want, just because you're limited with the foods you're choosing, it seems like in many cases it can be overcome by this recovery benefit that appears to be real. So amazing. I'm glad she says she's I think she's an ethical vegan. I think that's why she went plant-based, even though it was when she started lifting, she also did it. I don't think she did this for a fitness thing. It was that she was repulsed about eating animal products and wasn't able to justify killing animals for food. Did this. Now she says she wants to be an example that we can thrive on plant-based diets. So good for her. I'm a fan. Did I say her name?
I think no.
Anna Spack. S-P-A-C, but the S has a weird triangle over it. Arrow.
She's 32.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Wow. I guess she was like 19 or something.
She does look very young.
And and Matt, what's a clean and jerk and what's the snatch?
The snatch I know is you lifting the weight, sitting on the ground, and you need to pull it up. You clean it up into this position where it's like racked above your shoulder, above your above your chest. That's the clean. The snatch is just all in one movement.
And the jerk is up top.
What's that?
Is the jerk up top?
Yeah, it must be that press up part. I don't really know. And then I think they kind of do a leg split as they do that. But then a snatch, I think, just happens all in one movement. I think. But I haven't done any of those Olympic lifts. I've only done kettlebell versions of some.
I think that's right. I think the clean and jerk is you clean it up and then it's the press up, yeah, which is the final piece.
You jerk it up.
Yep.
Yeah. And then snatch it all at once, I think. Anyway, I don't know. But those are good. Can you imagine being 29 and like, just going about your life, doing your office job, and then 3 years later you're weightlifting champion of the country? That's bizarre.
Wild and awesome.
Yeah, you start a new sport and then you're the best in the whole country at it.
There was a guy I followed a while ago, last winter, who was a 40-year-old dad or something. So ski mountaineering is in the Olympics with this upcoming Winter Olympics for the first time. And he wanted to see, and it's just not, I think it's not, like, obviously there are plenty of Eskimo people in the United States, but it's not this, like, well-established, deep sport. And so he wanted to know if he could be a 40-something-year-old person who isn't an expert at it and train like an expert or like a pro and get the Olympic team. And and he ended up getting, like, sixth in the national championships or something like that. Mm-hmm. So he didn't qualify for the Olympics, and I think he kind of gave up after that. But it was kind of an interesting concept, and you watched him like really put in the work and see, like, he lost a whole bunch of weight and gained a whole bunch of strength, and just if you put in the work, then you have so much more. Like, it's amazing what you can do, what you can accomplish on these kind of smaller sports.
Would you say he has a natural gift for Eskimo?
I don't know. Maybe.
Well, I think the way to become an Olympian is exactly that. You find a weird niche sport that's coming and you guess it, one that's going to be here, and just listen to the rumblings and see what's coming before it's announced. Get really good at that sport, like curling before that was the thing in the US, or another bike track thing where they're doing whatever they do.
Pickleball.
Pickleball's huge, though. You need something that five people play in the whole country. And that's how you do it.
That's the way to do it. All right. Heard it here.
There's a dad holding something about it. I think it's called World Cup Dad. And he was like a regular dad, didn't play soccer. And his social media platform that he was starting was, I'm going to be on the U.S. World Cup team in 2028 or something.
In soccer?
Yeah. I think it's 2026. Actually, I'm not sure. And I was just like, that's the dumbest thing in the world. You think you're going to just, as a dad, already past peak athletic age, or maybe at it, you're going to start playing soccer, which, while not a huge sport in the U.S., one of the most popular sports in the U.S. that kids play, every kid plays.
Yeah.
And you're going to become one of the best 11 in the whole country.
Well, that's what this guy did, but he chose Eskimo. And not soccer.
Exactly. It's smart. Not soccer. It's a niche sport that nobody does.
Yeah. What
I don't know how it's going. Holden said the guy was getting better, but it's a far cry from.
I mean, the other thing, a couple years ago or a couple Olympics ago, there was a woman half pipe snowboarder who was from some country, somehow like got in because she was the only one who qualified because she was on the snowboard half pipe world tour, but she kind of got in because she was the only snowboarder from her country that you know, mm-hmm. apply it or whatever. And so she got to compete in the Olympics, and she was, I mean, nowhere near as good as anybody else. I mean, like miles away from everybody right. else.
But she's an Olympian.
But she's an Olympian. Yeah, yeah. She got the whole experience as an yeah. Olympian. People gave her a lot of crap for it, but.
Because people are mean. Yeah. She did yeah. something cool.
Yeah, she followed.
Well, I'll add to my strategy yeah. then. Not just find a niche sport, but also find a country that doesn't have anyone doing this sport at all.
Exactly.
And then move to that country, get there a couple years ahead of time, get your citizenship or whatever it takes to get on. That's how you become an Olympian.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
seems like a great idea.
Yeah. yeah.
Not well a huge commitment.
It. Well worth
there's so much money in those niche sports.
No, none.
Getting to the Olympics.
No, but then you can always, just like you wanted to be a New York Times bestselling author. Now, every time we introduce you, Matt Frazier, as right. New York Times bestselling author, if I was Olympian, you'd have to say, and Doug Hayes, Olympic athlete.
Exactly. That's why, well, why you do it.
We know what mm-hmm. you're doing now, Doug. Go find your country.
Good idea.
Find your sport, schema.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah, I do too. All right. On to the next story. I got to look downwards because my computer is low on power. So I had to plug that in, which means my monitor goes out. But Veggie News is telling us something that apparently happened last year, but news to me. A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez, he has cut red meat substantially out of his diet. And in the process, lost 30 pounds. He was eating steak, meat like steak, probably 8 out of 10 days, he says. Went down to 2 out of 10 last year and lost 30 pounds as a result of doing that. I don't know if there's other stuff built around it, but that's the main thing he did. Why are we talking about this? Well, because he's an athlete and because less red meat is something I think we need to hear. People are in this idea now that red meat is good for us. I don't know if it's as bad as the reputation is. Perhaps it's somewhat better than we've kind of thought it was, but I'm just not buying that it's really good for you. And so I'd like to share the story. World-class athlete, known steroid user, switches from red meat to non-red meat, less red meat, and loses weight.
You know what I heard? This is somewhat kind of related. Okay. Last night on my drive home from the Plant Strong conference, I was listening to NPR and, I was about to change it, but then they were interviewing somebody who just wrote a book about basically how anything you do for the climate on a personal level is useless. And plant-based eating came up, and he was talking about how basically if you stopped eating meat for the rest of your life, according to him, not a single animal would be saved. Like, if you got a whole bunch of people to all stop at the same time in the United States, enough for companies to notice, then it would mm-hmm. then drive, they wouldn't produce less chicken. They would make the cost of chicken cheaper. And then that would open up different markets here in the United States for people to buy more chicken, the people who do want to buy it, but at a cheaper mm-hmm. cost. Or if there was a big enough impact on the United States, then places where maybe the cost of chicken is too expensive in other countries or something like that, and we're importing or exporting, they would just ship them over there. And that would open up people's ability to buy chicken over there because the economics of the chicken would go down or the demand, you know. And so basically, it was just this kind of very sad, sad story of how, like, not only... is my personal decision not saving any animals, but even if I got a whole bunch of people to join me, that probably wouldn't save any animals either. And I don't know how true it is. It's just some guy on the radio, but it did make me a little depressed.
I mean, does it really matter though necessarily? Like,
if no, I'm making, like, it's yeah, not exactly. Change, not
if, I, if I'm making the choice not to eat an animal, that does that still means that I am not eating.
Yeah, yeah,
that
yeah. Animal. No, I mean, it's not going to change my decision at all.
Yeah,
but I don't know. Like, I like to think right. I like to think that I can have a small impact, like a minuscule impact.
You do,
or
Doug.
That by this, I'm having a collective impact. Like Mr. Jeffrey's saying, it's the collective impact that has power. But he's basically saying no, like that doesn't even have power. As long as there are people eating chicken somewhere or willing to eat chicken somewhere, then the economic powers will just shift and the same chickens will be eaten. Just
I don't think that's right. That doesn't like that would imply that the chicken industry is currently is not a competitive industry. That some company has a monopoly in there with limitless profit and all you're doing is cutting into their profit when you stop eating it and they'll just kind of redistribute it at a lower price. Like if they have to sell the chicken at a lower price, at some point that becomes not profitable for them to do. and they have to start producing less chicken and keeping that price where it is. Like, that's what supply and
demand. Yeah, I mean, eventually, mm-hmm. yes. You know, but that would take a whole lot of people. You know,
I mean, that's what we're talking about. If you get a whole lot of people with you to do it, like, I don't know. I don't know. I just don't think that's right at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. Yeah. He's wrong.
Well, as Mr. Jeffrey said, it's like, it's the collective that has the power. And I think that is the whole purpose of the plant-based movement is getting people to it's getting people to eat less meat, because if we all keep doing that, or if we get more people to do that, then I do think it has to have an impact. Right.
Well, I mean, that's what I would say, you know, but the argument is that, like, I mean, it would take, you know, let's say we were to get 5% of the United States to quit eating meat, right? That would be a 5x of what it is now, right?
Vegan. I think there's about 5% who are vegetarian.
Okay. Well, if we 5x the vegan, then that would probably drop demand in the United States. A noticeable amount for the companies, but maybe that would drop prices, so then people would be buying more who maybe couldn't afford to, you know, maybe it was a once a week purchase before and now it's a twice or three times a week purchase. And so then they're just going to buy more,
but that's not how supply and demand works. When the price goes down, the amount of that the company's willing to sell at this price goes down. It's just how it is. That means the most fundamental law there is. You sell a certain amount at a certain price. You're willing to sell X amount at X price. Mm-hmm. It doesn't, once you have to sell less, you start wanting to produce less or sell for less. You start wanting
to produce. Do we really think these big companies are just going to keep lowering their prices? Like, until it's 50 cents for a bag of chicken nuggets?
No, of course not.
Yeah, see?
So in theory, they have increased production up to the point where it is profitable for them, right? And if there's more profit to be getting by more production, they increase that production even more, and they get the point where there is not additional profit from expanding more. So when the price goes down, that whole overall profit, they start producing less. It's just how it works. Take an economics course, Doug.
this guy was an economist.
Well, he's making it up. He's trying to get people not eating.
I want to read this article or
It was late. It was late. I was high on the plant power.
And you were yelling at the radio. No.
Yeah. Right. Let's revisit this topic when I can share it with you guys.
And okay. Actually,
it is an interesting and important thought. So.
Yeah,
it's a dumb thought.
Frazier disagrees fundamentally.
That's exactly fundamental. Yeah. Supply and demand, the first thing you learn in economics that seems to not go with. All right, on to the next topic. If I can find it,
I think you're wrong though, a little bit, Matt.
I'm not. I mean, unless there's details out here that about the industry that we don't understand that somehow makes it, if it's some sort of monopoly or something where it's not part of the subject to the normal laws of competitive supply and demand. Then in that case, that could be wrong for sure. We need some economist to tell us what I'm missing.
Matt Frazier. Yeah.
I almost went to econ grad school, Doug. But I didn't.
You went to math.
Math.
All right, here we go. We get some bad news for plant-based diets. Just in case you thought plant-based meant no foodborne illness or breakouts or whatever, outbreaks. Trader Joe's has stopped selling basil, fresh basil, in 29 states due to a salmonella outbreak. It's these 2.5-ounce clamshell style plastic containers. Those always seem kind of gross too when they get a little brown inside the leaves and they don't smell so good.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised. They said the people who bought the basil shouldn't eat it, so they said throw it out or return to Trader Joe's. So I don't know if it's a recall, but they just stopped selling it. I guess you don't recall something that expires 2 days later. So they just said don't eat it. And at the same time, an outbreak of listeriosis in several European countries was linked to vegan cheese from raw nut milk, says researchers, or reported researchers. Well, the outbreak happened between April and December 2022, so don't worry too much if you recently ate some vegan cheese. If you're still alive and hearing this, you're probably good. So there you go.
Almost certainly.
I made some raw nut milk. Raw cashew cheese the other day.
Ooh.
I don't know if they're actually raw or not. in that when I buy them in the US, they probably have some sort of pasteurization happening.
Mm-hmm. Does the bag say raw?
Was it good?
I think it said raw cashews from, yeah. There you go. I don't know. I put it into the vodka sauce that we made. It was just for that. It was a replacement for heavy cream. So I didn't put any, seasonings or anything. Just made a cream. Yum. But yeah, it was good. The dinner was good.
Nice.
So there you go. There's your weather report. That's it. That's the news. All right. We got one thing to talk about today. And I don't know how it's going to land with people. I don't know if people are going to care about this. It matters to me because I've done this a bunch of times and I actually like it. The article is from the Washington Post, How Flotation Therapy May Help Your Mental Health. So I wish it was a little bit more about physical health. It's mostly just about mental health. And the idea is, I think people know now about flotation therapy. It used to be called sensory deprivation therapy, but this article has made me aware that that's not really what it is now. A lot of them offer places that have light in them and tanks that are kind of out in the open and not in the dark or the total quiet. So people are doing it. They're getting benefits. It's helping to treat eating disorders even, and all kinds of good things like that. And there's some science behind it. The question sort of is this really any different or more beneficial than, meditation, sitting there, just not doing anything for an hour and just relaxing. And it's not clear to me from the research they've quoted here, recited here, that it is. On the other hand, I don't really care because it's still nice to do, and I'm not going to just sit for an hour and meditate. But I will go to that because it's fun and different and it's interesting. So I don't know. Have either of you guys done this?
No, not in this format. I'd love to hear about your experience.
What format?
I haven't either. I got a Katie gift certificate. She's done it a few times. And really, really enjoyed it. I believe that it lowers anxiety and that it works, but I think that it's basically just doing the same thing that meditation would or any sort of relaxing, something that you can do where you just let go of everything.
You just lay there and float.
Yeah, that's it.
Little bit of water. Is that it?
No, it's like maybe a foot of water. And they put so much salt in there that you can't help but to float on top of it. Yeah, you have to. And you lay there, they give you a little cushion for your head, like a ring flotation pillow, if you want to have your head on that, but you don't always need it. Your head can stay up fine too. And you just lay there and they shut the door. The place I've done it, it's completely dark and completely quiet. There's nothing at all. And the idea, and this is what I think is legit about it. When you lay still enough in that water, it's warm water, but it's not like hot. It's not as hot as a bath. Eventually the water around your skin takes on the same temperature as your skin. So you're kind of surrounded by this little bubble of water that feels like nothing to you if you just stay still long enough. And so then you have gotten rid of that sense as well, the sense of much feeling. It just sort of feels like you can't feel a boundary between you and the water. And that's like, I don't know. They mentioned here this idea of like this disassociation or like feeling basically that you don't feel that boundary between you and sort of the rest of the world. And I think that can help you. I think that can kind of help you get into a meditative kind of vibe, the less you feel, distinct from everything else, because a lot of these Eastern practices and things will, one of their central teachings is that we're not, it's just an illusion that we're different from each other and different from the world, that it's all just one thing and we're all part of it. So I don't know. I found it really nice. It's kind of boring, which Leslie Knight says, I floated twice. I thought I'd hate it and be bored, but I liked it. I mean, it does, you hit a point after, because you can do it for like 45 minutes or you can do it for an hour and a half. I think I even did 2 hours once. And you get to a point where like, it's kind of boring and you like kind of wish it was done. But that happens with meditation too. And at that point you sometimes get up, but sometimes they say, don't get up just yet. Try to stick through that. And this, you're just more likely to stay because you paid for this time. You're not going to get out. So for me, it just helped me like being forced to stay there, not really forced, but having this reason I'm going to stay there. I didn't feel like I didn't really meditate. I just like sorted through a bunch of stuff thinking wise. And I actually think that's what's good about it is it makes you just, you don't do anything, right? There's no phone. There's no distraction. You just don't do anything. You can't do anything for an hour and a half or 2 hours. And there's not many situations in our life other than when we're sleeping that happens. And I think that's when you process stuff and you come out with like just a sense of what you need to do next. And that's how it is for me.
So you come up with ideas. Like, I mean, think about the shower. People have best ideas in shower, right? That's,
right. Old
saying. Similar where you're just kind of forced to not be distracted by anything?
No, because I don't think that's how the shower ideas work. I think shower ideas works when you're doing something so mundane and repetitive that you're not thinking about the thing at all. And that's what allows your brain to kind of do something. And then something just clicks. But no, I didn't have that. I just felt like it just sort of, for me, like helps to sort out priorities. And I'm like, at the end, it's like, this thing's important. This actually isn't important at all. And the very next thing I need to do after this is go do something. And who knows what. But I don't know. It has worked well for me. Bianca says, what if you have to pee? You probably should, and I don't think anybody would notice. You'd be then floating in your own pee for a while, but it's already super salty and warm, so I wouldn't notice that either.
Basically just, yeah. There are Epsom salts too, right? Or is that just some you can do Epsom salt?
I'm not sure what the salt is that's in this.
The article said Epsom salt.
Oh, yeah? Okay. Maybe that's what it is.
Yeah, because there's a big recovery benefits to Epsom salts. I don't really know. I don't know the science behind them, but I know that they work. That's for sure. Yeah, they're cleansing, normally scented.
I don't know if you use this language. I don't think the article did. They call it flotation therapy, but the place that Katie would go is they call it a sensory deprivation tank because they're removing all of the senses, right? Pretty much is the theory. And so you're just kind of one with the water, one with the universe.
Yeah. I mean, that's the one that I have done, which is that, Still Point Wellness in Asheville. Doug, you've probably seen that place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's where Katie went to.
That's some dealings with them, I bet.
You better not have peed in the tank before Katie got in there.
I think the water gets drained and filtered every time goes through it.
Oh, really? Okay.
Filter out pee.
Leslie says you use the same water as everyone else. So.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, they call that sensory deprivation. And apparently there was a movie called Altered States that this article references. And that book is for sale in Still Point Wellness too. And I always wondered what the big deal was, but apparently that made it infamous for this shutting off all the senses. And that is actually not that important in the sort of modern interpretations of this. People are offering the, you know, open tanks and all this where it's more pleasant, perhaps not dark, not scary.
See, I think I would want the deprivation. I would want the darkness.
Yeah, I think I would too. Mm-hmm. I'm not there just to relax. I'm there to kind of, you know.
Because the idea is that, as you were saying, Fraser, that like you almost stop feeling your body because the temperature of the water. So it's like literally all of your senses, like even feeling is.
Right. So if you're hearing stuff and seeing stuff at the same time, to me, that would take away a little bit from that. Mm-hmm. It's not that it couldn't still be relaxing. And it for some people would be more pleasant then, and maybe they'd be more likely to do it. But I don't know. To me, that feels like kind of the point. To come back to the question about how do you pee, like you're in like a little area that has like a door and a toilet and a shower and all this stuff that you get to use and no one can come in. So,
you can get up and pee.
Yeah, you just get out and do that thing I do. And I think I probably did that once. I don't remember.
Interrupt your meditative state, but you know.
Right. Leslie says it does not get drained. I think it goes through filters. Maybe it's not drained. Maybe it's constantly being filtered. Because I remember.
Well, it has to be constantly being heated.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe.
Anyway.
I think this article is fascinating because it talks about like the mental health benefits. And I mean, it sounds like the research is not quite there yet, but they talked quite a bit about like beneficial for people with eating disorders specifically. Yeah. And I don't know how that science connects necessarily, but they did say like because it lets you like forget about your body that can be beneficial for people who suffer from eating disorders because there is a lot of like body dysmorphia that occurs with those disorders. So I think that part is really cool. It also kind of sounds like womb like to me. Mm-hmm. Brings us back to our state of womb.
I could see that. I mean, it seems
floating around. Like
I would imagine that. Yeah, you're floating around, it's warm, it feels all like one. You don't realize there's a separate whole world outside from where you are. In this case, you do, but
they pump in some like faint heart beating sounds and maybe some like,
maybe Mozart kind of music or something like that, whatever that be.
Maybe some like stomach rumblings.
Yeah, brings us back to the beginning to our more concentrated state.
If they actually tried to mimic being in the womb, and like I'm sure they can figure out what that roughly experience sounds like, even I guess they got to figure out what your ears are like.
Exactly what Doug just described.
Yeah. Rumbling, maybe Mozart, some of that Charlie Brown teacher voice going.
And then lots of like, oh, so uncomfortable.
Yep.
Yep. Getting pushed around every once in a while.
Ringing a little bell to like call the husband over to come yeah. on you hand and foot. And a little bell.
You know, I mean, if they were able to create that, I mean, there's all the technology, right, about like the for infants, you know, where you can get, you know, swaddled and then rocked in a certain way. Like they put you in a little thing that's supposed to mimic rocking. I mean, I bet that like if you could do that for kids, even who are still close enough to womb age, but out of swaddles and stuff like that, then that would be.
I'm gonna stick my toddler in a float tank. Go float, honey. Just remember.
I wonder if that's like a blissful experience, or is that like the worst experience of your entire life, and then you live the rest of your life trying to not to have that. All
I don't think so. I'm obviously biased as, you know, a mother who has carried two children, but I think it's supposed to be like one of the states that we try to bring ourselves back to. Like that's part of why quiet is beneficial, because we're bringing ourselves back to our beginning states when the world around us was not so stimulating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'd be shocked actually if people haven't tried to replicate that womb experience, and you'd think that this type of thing would be used in that. I mean, that seems like a very obvious move if you're kind of looking to make some money off a new age practice or something. Just make a womb replication center. Anyway, they do point out with respect to the eating disorder thing that right after float therapy, and again 6 months later, patients showed significant reductions in body dissatisfaction. And this is where they chose different body sizes and things, and they tried to match their own and their ideal body. And they, you know, based on that, they determined people's feelings, I guess, about their own body. And they chose ideal bodies that were very close or closer to their own. And somehow that just demonstrated a less distorted body image. So that's kind of interesting that it could do that. One other thing here, this is a little bit related to what we've been saying. Someone said, you know, this is just one of many toolkits in my toolbox for managing anxiety. And I was thinking, what kind of world are we living in that like this has to be just one tool? Like this is a pretty extreme thing. Like you need a whole toolbox of stuff, like, and this is just one tool for managing anxiety. And I'm not saying that person is wrong. I'm saying our whole world is messed up. If that's because I think a lot of people would say that they got a bunch of tools for managing anxiety, and that is too bad.
What tools do you have, Matt? I mean, this is one of them, right?
I have morning pages. I mean, I don't do this very often. This is, you know, once a year when I'm in Asheville, I'll do it. It's either have a drink with Doug in Asheville or do this. I don't know.
So far, you've chosen this.
I'm going to pay $50 and do this instead. I don't know. I don't think I have other tools. I think that's it. I mean, I chill out. Alcohol. I like to drink red wine. That helps me. I think that manages anxiety. It probably creates some too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have other tools, but it's a couple. Mm-hmm. I don't have a toolbox. I got a couple of tools. No need for a box. Mm. What are your guys' tools? What's in your toolbox?
I'll say I have a couple tools in my toolbox. Therapy. Yeah, therapy has always been very helpful. Meditation, exercise is huge for me. Like daily exercise keeps me at a baseline, I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Those are some of my tools.
You think it's natural to need tools? Like, is this just how humans are? Like, we're cavemen, cavewomen. Do they always have anxiety over being eaten or not having enough food or whatever, and then they had to manage it?
Maybe.
Or have we just created a terrible world?
I mean, I think it's a little bit of both, probably.
Yeah.
I think probably. So, too.
Like, I think we amplify anxieties. This day and age, we probably amplify anxieties in a different way than we did even in our parents' generations. Although, you know, they had plenty to be anxious about as well. But then like even further back, of course, cavemen. I don't know. I mean, but it's basic stuff for me anyway, at this phase of my life, it's exercise. Like you said, it's, eating healthier. You know, if I eat too much junk food, then that'll raise anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's talking, having deep conversations with Katie and a select group of friends. Matt would have been on that list, but he never calls me. Yeah, and meditation. You know, and I've done therapy in my life, and that was helpful. But
did you say exercise?
Yeah, exercise for sure.
That was number one. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Woodworking.
I think we have a lot of different stimuli, in my opinion, in like today. Than, you know, back then, back way back when, like we had all that people had to do was figure out where their food was and like how to get the food to stay alive, basically. And we don't necessarily, some people don't have that, you know, don't have that issue. And so that like, we have all these other things that create or that we create in our world, these senses and mm-hmm. ways to feel deprived potentially.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe that the trying to survive, the running away from the tigers, the chasing whatever they killed, that probably managed the anxiety, right? That's like an outlet that you have to do all this. Just like a climber will go and do climbing because that forces them to mm-hmm. focus. And that's probably how they manage anxiety. Mm-hmm. And we don't have that anymore. We don't have very little life or death stuff.
Yeah. But can you imagine like laying down, you know, for the night, about to go to sleep and just knowing that there's tigers like out on the prowl for you at any moment.
Right. Like, yeah, but then you immediately have to become at peace with the fact that you might just die tonight. And then a lot of anxiety probably just goes away after that.
It's true.
I'm telling you, we need the great flood situation, Doug. I've been talking about this for a couple weeks now. We need a great reset. We need a technological Thanks. Rewind to happen.
I don't disagree. Technological.
We do not need a great flood, Matt. We need the great flood.
Power outage all across the world.
No. That would be terrible. There'd be so much suffering.
Isabel's on my side here. Unexpected ally. I thought you would be struggling for sure.
No, I'm pretty skeptical of technology. I like bringing it back. But I mean, Doug is very right. Like, obviously, I'm thinking of like computers and cell phones and things. But like, I also make my livelihood with a computer. But there are, you know, all of the technology that we have in the healthcare industry and support. Yeah. That's a long conversation for another day.
I read a tiny bit of the Unabomber's work, his thesis thing that he wrote. I literally read a synopsis of it. I just found it. Somehow it came up on Twitter or something. I wasn't seeking it out. And they said his thesis was basically that technology doesn't make life better. It just increases the volatility of things. So it increases the house of cards kind of impact effect of things. And that it makes it so that there can be catastrophes more likely. And I thought maybe that's right. Maybe technology is like, it's just this inevitable thing. You have to have it, but it's just bad. It just goes down a bad path. But that's probably, you know, on the other hand, I think a lot of evidence said that people now are happier than they've ever been, or at least the quality of life now is better than it's ever been. Less fighting, less wars, all that stuff, even though we always obviously see the magnified bad stuff. Anyway, who knows? Not really a topic for No Meat Athlete Radio, I don't think.
Not quite.
There's lots of interesting topics that came out of today. I'm gonna find that radio program. I'm gonna send it to you guys. I'll post it in Discord so we can have a proper debate around it.
Yeah, I'd like to see that.
Yeah,
let's do it.
Okay. All right, good. Well, this was good, everyone. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back Tuesday, as we always are. Tuesday through Friday is the show. It's 11 a.m. on Tuesday through Thursday, and it's 1 p.m. Eastern time on Friday. Thank you for joining us, Isabel, today. Always nice to have you pop in on the Friday show, where you are a staple, of course, not just a pop-in, but, you know, you pop in on the week to come in on Friday. Anyway, good to see everybody else who's here. That's it. Hope you enjoy your weekend, and we'll see you next week.
Absolutely. Yep.
Bye-bye.
Bye.